And welcome to another edition of the Speedy Digest. And welcome to another edition of the Speedy Digest. I am your host, Kyle Magden, tonight. And yes, I get to open the show for once. It's nice to be in here tonight. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm pretty doing good.
Well. How are you doing, Magda?
I'm doing good. I think I jumped the gun there a little bit, but still. No harm, no foul. So. Everything's good. You know, life's good right now. And we have a great show for y'all tonight. And we actually have a guest tonight. We have Mason Mingus, NASCAR Camping World Truck Series driver, coming on at approximately age 15. Current driver for Billy Boat Motorsports. So it's going to be interesting to talk to him tonight. The transition over from Wintron Racing to Billy Boat Motorsports the last 3 weeks or so, and how that's going, and pretty much his whole racing career. So really looking forward to that tonight. So guys, staying on the topic of the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, and actually the NASCAR Nationwide Series, which will be the Xfinity Series next year, had some changes announced today. The truck field will be down to 32 for each race in 2015, and also the qualifying procedures will be changed as well. They will not be on the top 30 in the Xfinity Series in owner points, and then the top 25 in owner points in trucks starting in 2015. Now, I think that what NASCAR might be doing is doing something similar to the Cup Series. You actually have to qualify. It's like the old rules, like when they had the top 36, kind of, you know, with the whole Danica Patrick, Stuart Haas deal, and Tommy Baldwin racing, kind of the same. That kind of, I think that kind of killed it for the Cup Series. So, but, I mean, what did you guys think about the announcement, and what really stood out to you?
Oh, I think the fact that they're changing it itself is a big deal, because this is going to affect the Nationwide Series, I think, more in Truck Series, because from what it looks like, as we're going right now, 10 of the 18 races this year would still have had shorter fields, which is really, really bad. Hopefully next year, though, we'll have fuller fields, but it's a little doubtful. But we can talk about that later. But for the Nationwide Series, it's going to be Xfinity Series next year. It's going to be completely different for the guys at the back of the field. A guy like Ryan Ellis, Tanner Berrio, all those guys are going to have to really focus on making sure they get into the race next year, and they're going to have to qualify very well.
Oh, yeah, I agree totally. You know.
Yeah, go ahead, Brett.
Well, I agree totally. I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting to see the change. You know, I like this format. It's a little bit easier for the race fan to understand. But it's also going to put a much more emphasis to getting into the field, like the Ryan Ellis's and those drivers. So, you know, it's going to make qualifying interesting next year, and I think it's going to be really good. As far as the Camping World Truck Series shifting down to 32 trucks from 36, I think it's going to be great. I think, you know, as we've said it before here on this show, that quantity doesn't always mean quality, and so with more quality trucks competitive in the field, I think it's going to enhance the series. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And you know, but the only thing is, and you know, this qualifying format, as we saw at Talladega this past weekend, it's not really fair to some of those drivers to do it that way. You know, but definitely going to be interesting how that's going to work out and if we're going to see any big names possibly miss the field again.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, I want to kind of capitalize there on what you said about the smaller truck series field. Reducing it down to 36 to 32, you're right. It's going to make these guys push a little harder to get into the field, because we might get some fields where there's going to be 34 trucks on the entry list and two will go home, and you do not want to be one of those two that will be going home. And I think that they want to put the emphasis on qualifying now, because we all know that right now, you know, the top so many cars are locked into the show, and then everything else is provisional land, and then past champions provisional. I do have to agree with you, Brett, that we could see some big names not qualify for a race, should they have any problems. I mean, I can't imagine a truck race without Max Crafton and Johnny Sauter And I can't imagine a nationwide now Xfinity Series race without upping the regulars, you know, like Chase Elliott and Regan Smith, for example.
Yeah, and I think going on what you guys are saying, I like the shorter fields because there's not many field fillers in that case. That's kind of what they did with the nationwide Xfinity Series 2 years ago when they went from 43 to 40. I think that was a good move. Racing's been really good the last couple of years when they've had it, and I think I expect the same for the truck series because I've been to truck races, and you know whether they have 36 trucks or not, the racing is still is great. That series has thrived the last couple of years with so many winners, such great races, and I think it's going to continue. And as for qualifying, yeah, you guys hit the nail on the head with big names missing. I mean, you know, Talladega with the Cup guys, that was crazy with what happened. And, you know, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. missing the race. And by the way, guys, the second week in a row, Roush Fenway Racing car failed to make the race. So really unfortunate for that team, but that happens. And, I mean, I didn't know about it. And I think, you know, that was a whole bunch of issues with that qualifying. NASCAR trying to try something new. But sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I'm going to be interested to see whether it changes or not come to the 2015 Daytona 500 for the Cup Series. But like you guys are saying with the new format, I'm fine with it. I think it puts more emphasis on qualifying. Teams are not locked in for the Truck Series and the Nationwide Series, so they have to have the speed every single week, not just be locked in and just put up a time for some of the teams that are locked in. So I think that's a good move going forward. So, I mean, I think the other news nugget, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're going to have the names on the back of the windshield, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm wrong, correct me on that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so it's kind of like what the Cup Series has with the on the front of the windshield, and like I said, with the Nationwide, the truck will be on the back. So, I mean, what do you guys think about that? Yeah, and I've read some things today. I mean, do you think that'll give the driver their identity? And let's start with Brett on this.
I don't know about the back part. I think it would work better on the front windshield, like the Cup Series.
True.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It definitely looks better on the front of the car instead of the back. But then again, it's something different, and you want to make sure that no series is alike completely. So it's good. It separates the Cup Series from the lower divisions, and that's what you want. And plus, you have the Camping World, and you have the Xfinity logos on the front windshield. So when you think about it, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think you guys bring up a good point, especially you, Joseph, when you're distinguishing the series, because just like we had the chase for the Sprint Cup in the Cup Series, and just had the chase for that, and had the regular point system in the Nationwide and Truck Series, I think that we've seen great point battles regardless that there's no chase. We've seen it. And that's no pun with Chase Elliott's name. But we've seen great battles on the track, and that's how it's been, you know, with the drivers. In the last 2 years, I mean, we have not been the champion going into Homestead for the NASCAR Nationwide Series. Same thing with the trucks. Except with the exception of last year, I mean, it was kind of, we knew who was going to win. But other than that, I think we were going to, you know, that was what was going to happen. So, really interesting stuff, and there's just so much to look forward to. And you know, we have, you know, the Truck Series, I think that has, like, it's a bright future ahead of them. I mean, they probably have some of the best racing that I've seen in the last couple of years, really better than the Cup Series. And I know the Cup Series, of course, with the new rule changes in 2015 are going to make it better, hopefully. So I think there's still a lot to look forward to. Same thing with the Nationwide Series. It's going to be Xfinity Series. I think it's going to be an interesting series next year. I think you're going to see guys like Chase Elliott, Regan Smith coming back, contending again. I mean, they pretty much have been 1-2 in the points most of the year, but you're going to see it again in 2015. I think you're going to see much of the same. You're going to see new drivers as well. I mean, I don't know who we're going to see yet, but I think in the next month or so, and of course leading up to February, you're going to see some really interesting names. and new names, and in both the trucks and the Xfinity as well. So, lots to look forward to in those series, and it's just gonna be interesting to see what happens. So, we still have some time before Mason Mingus comes on. I want to talk about the recap to the truck race, because, you know, this is kind of a good lead-in for Mason. It's kind of a crazy race. I mean, it's kind of what, you know, you expect at Talladega. And for Mason Mingus, I mean, he had one of he had a fast truck. Showed it in practice with drafting, and just did not get a break during the race. Wrong place at the wrong time, and I did not finish the race, so kind of a tough break for that team, but we'll move on. So, I mean, what did you guys think of the race? And Timothy Peters won, a lot of drafting in the race, some wrecks. We'll start with Brett again. I know you didn't have much to say last time, but what did you think of the truck race, and what did you take out of it?
Well, I thought the truck race was pretty good. There was a lot of side-by-side racing, and Timothy Peters just, you know, stole the win, and, you know, he did a really good job behind the wheel of that thing. And you know, I like the truck series style of draft. It certainly made it interesting, and I can't wait until the truck series goes back to Daytona next year, as I always enjoy the restrictor plate races.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, Brett. It was a great race. We had so much passing throughout the race. It was fantastic. There weren't as many lead changes as I thought there would be, but Timothy Peters and Ryan Blaney throughout the whole race, both of them led 31 laps, 4 times each. It was incredible. I really thought Spencer Gallagher was going to win that race at one point, the way he was running at the end of that thing. But the one guy I want to point out is Chris Fontaine. He keeps running amazing at these restrictor plate tracks. It's the only races he runs every year, and each time he runs it, he's fantastic. He's using a former KBM chassis, and it proves every single time that it's an amazing truck. And then there were some tough breaks. Ron Hornaday Jr., Ryan Sieg, Mason Mingus, who we're going to have on a little bit, Johnny Sauter, they all wrecked. And for Johnny Sauter, well, he had his engine problem, but that cost him a ton of points. And now he's fourth in points instead of second behind Matt Crafton. So now you're going to have Ryan Blaney and Matt Crafton battling for the championship, it looks like. But I wouldn't count out Darrell Wallace Jr. yet. He had a top 10 finish at Talladega. He finished ninth, and he just had a very quiet race. He was making sure that he finished, he didn't wreck. And then Daniel Suarez, he made his Camping World Truck Series debut. What other place to make your debut than the Talladega? It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, for sure. I thought the truck race was actually pretty decent as well, and that ending was really amazing. I mean, I really thought there was going to be a last lap pass, but no. Timothy Peters, you know, it's about time that he had another victory, and I thought the race was a little short. I mean, 94 laps in the truck series seems like a very short race, but then again, I think it was a good enough length. There was definitely some passing for the lead, but really nobody could, you know, make any gains or losses. But you're right, tough break for Ron Hornaday Jr. and tough break for German Quiroga. I really thought that he was going to be a factor in the race, but ends up getting taken out in the small one at the beginning of the race. But yeah, it was certainly a good ending. Trucks going everywhere, and it's amazing how they didn't wreck. And, you know, once again, awesome job, Timothy Peters. I mean, it's about time he went back to victory lane.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so much that went on with that race. And there's just so many things you could point out. And I'm going to kind of save this till after Mason's on. I have a question for y'all about the truck race, about one of the rules, but I'll just leave it at that right now, because you guys bring up good points, though, about I agree with you, Joseph. I think Darrell Wallace Jr. is still in this point chance title. I think he has a chance.
Hey,
I mean, he's hanging away in there.
We have Mason Mingus on now.
Okay, let's bring him on then. So, welcome to the show, Mason. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me on. Glad to be on here.
Mason, I have a few questions for you. You know, you've had two races on your belt at Billy Belt Motorsports. What has been the one thing that you've learned that transitioning over from Wintron Racing to Billy Belt Motorsports?
You know, all the guys at Billy Belt have done a great job. I think the biggest draw going over to Billy Belt Motorsports is their engine program paired up with BCR Motors. And, you know, obviously ECR, they run up front every single week. And you know, we're looking to go after and take advantage of that and get ourselves a win here at the end of the year, at least run up front. You know, we had a great truck at Talladega. Those guys did a great job putting all these trucks together in such a short time. We went to Talladega, and I'd say we had one of the best trucks there. We really had a shot at that one. Unfortunately, we got taken out pretty early in the race, but that's kind of part of the deal there. But you know, Billy's done a great job. He's committed to this truck, team, and to building it. And you know, I just look for more success. You know, we've had fast trucks. We just had a little bit of bad luck. But I think if we can get past that, we'll be there. We'll be up front.
Mason, why the decision to leave Wintron Racing and then go to Billy Belt Motorsports?
You know, it's not saying anything bad about the guys at Wintron. That's a great bunch of guys, and you know, it's definitely people that I consider my friend outside of being at the racetrack on the weekends. But you know, we weren't getting the finish that we wanted to get, and I didn't feel like we had the trucks that we needed to have to run up front. And you know, we raced for probably 3/4 of the season or more with them, and you know, we kept trying, and I just didn't feel like we were headed in the right direction. So we made that switch, and Billy was willing to run the last 6 races with us, and was willing to move quickly to throw that together for us. And it's been a great transition. He's brought on a lot of great people and put a lot of the right things and the right tools in place for us to go run well. So I'm excited about it, and I think it's been a good move. And now we just got to go prove that we can finish up front. You know, we proved that we can run up front, that we do have fast trucks, but we got to put it on paper now. But you know, just looking for a little bit better equipment.
One more for you, and then I'll off to the guys. You ran ARCA in 2013, a full season under your belt. Did any of that experience help you out in your first full season of trucks?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the ARCA cars are so different than the trucks, so it was a huge learning curve for me moving into the trucks. Obviously, you do a lot more mile and a half racing, but the good thing about ARCA and what paid off is you got a little bit of car control, learned a lot about that, get in these heavier race cars. You know, late models are so much lighter, less horsepower. You get in these, you know, a 3,400-pound stock car with this much motor. It's learning progress, so it helps. The ARCA Series helps. And then also you get to go to some of these racetracks. You go to Kansas, you go to Kentucky, you go to some of the mile and a half, you go to speedways. And it's a great tool for myself moving into the truck series this year, because I at least knew what the track was like. I knew certain things to expect and to know. So although the cars drive different, you got a lot of experiences that helped. And that helped me speed up my learning curve at the racetrack when we got there that weekend, because everything wasn't brand new, although it was obviously new running trucks this year. But so it was a big help to me, but they definitely do drive very different than the ARCA cars.
Mason, it's Joseph Walken here. Now, you have an average finish of worse than 19th this year. What do you need to improve on going through the final few races of the year?
You know, we gotta put everything together. You know, I'm kind of writing off the first 3/4 of the season because we're in a whole different ball game right now. So to me, we're starting right back at square one. But the good thing is we've got a group of guys that are experienced and that are really knowledgeable. So it's not that we're starting at square one from an experience level, from an equipment level, but we're right back to putting zero on the paper. We get to make our own track record and throw away what I've done this year with Wintron. So I'm excited for that. You know, at Talladega, we had a great truck, and you know, we got caught up. So I think if we come to Martinsville with another solid truck, and and just try to keep ourselves out of trouble and run the smartest race that I can, then I think we've got the speed and we've got the equipment to get a top five finish, get a top ten finish. We just gotta put all those pieces of the puzzle together. And it's hard to do. Vegas was, it was definitely a learning experience for this team and for all of us working together for the first time. So, you know, Vegas was kind of one that we wanted to learn from, and then we had a week off moving into this last stretch to kind of regroup, figure out what we learned, and put it in place for the last five races. So I'm looking forward to Martinsville. I love short track racing. I really like Martinsville as a racetrack. It's a tough place as drivers from the driver standpoint. So I think if we just got to put each one of those things that we've learned thus far into place, and I don't see any reason that we can't run top 10, but I'm hoping for a better finish than top 10.
Now, since you switched teams, you're working with Dan Dieringhoff, who won the 2008 Nationwide Series Championship with Clint Bowyer. What's your relationship been like since you joined the team, and is there anything that is different from him compared to the crew chiefs you worked with this year?
I actually only worked with Dan at Vegas, and then they actually brought on Ben Leslie, who was on top of the box for me last weekend at Talladega, and will be on with us for the rest of the season. So Dan was great to work with, great guy. You tell, he had a lot of experience. I knew him from when we went ARCA racing last year. Just saw him and Chad Boatcrum run the ARCA races. So I knew that he was an experienced crew chief and had a lot of talent. And he was able to help me a lot at Vegas. But they actually brought on Ben Leslie, started Talladega, and he did a great job, called a great race until we got wrecked. But, you know, he's got a ton of experience. We were just sitting out at dinner last week at Talladega and just listening to him talk about all the racetracks he's been to and all the drivers worked with and, you know, at all different teams. It was a learning experience just sitting there listening to him talk. So I look forward to going to Martinsville and into Texas, Phoenix, Homestead, and learning what I can from them and improving our communication with each other so that we can get right on board and get up to speed quickly when we unload.
Now, in high school, you were a wrestler, you ran track, and you played football. How did you end up becoming a race car driver?
Yeah, I've... racing's always been my main sport, if you will, my passion. I started racing quarter midgets when I was 7 years old, so I've been racing for a long time. And I definitely enjoyed playing all those other sports in high school, but you know, that was just me having a little bit of fun and enjoying high school. But racing always came first, and I actually had a chance to do pretty well in the state championship in wrestling, state championship missed it because we were going to run the ARCA race at Daytona. So, you know, those sports are fun, and they definitely taught me a lot. Definitely taught me how to manage my time because we were traveling all over the country, and then we'd be back and I'd have a match or a game where I was running to that game to try to make it by kickoff or whatever it may be. So it was definitely a learning experience, and it taught me a lot. You know, I wouldn't trade it. Wouldn't trade that experience for anything, but racing's always been my passion. Started when I was 7 years old, and we've run a ton of races since, and that's hopefully one of these days we'll get to race on Sunday.
Now, overall, how would you evaluate your rookie year? Do you feel like next year you're going to have a lot better of a year, or do you feel like there's some small things that you just need to improve on?
You know, thus far, if you sit down and look at it on paper, we really haven't had a great year. You know, I'm thankful to everybody that's made it possible and helped us get here. You know, I think we're putting in place the big things right now, and trying to get better car, better trucks, better motors, you know, quality guys around me. So I think we're trying to knock out some of those big obstacles that we need to improve on here, finishing out the season. So then next year we can start looking at the little stuff that I need to get better at, that we need to improve as a team. And try to move forward from there. So there's definitely some improvements that I need to make and that we need to make as a team, whoever that may be next year. And so I would say that I hope to come out next year if I get the opportunity to and contend for races week after week. You know, that's what our goal was this year. But obviously, it was a rough year. I had some things to learn. It was a new experience, new adventure for Wintron Racing. So, and it didn't click. They were phenomenal for me in the ARCA series, and they gave me my first ARCA start opportunity to come do that. And I ran with them for 3 years off and on in the ARCA series until last year. Ran it full time, and they was a great bunch of guys. We just couldn't make it click in the truck series. So I'm hoping that we get some of those big jumps out of the way in the last 5 races here, and then we can start fine-tuning for next year and seeing, you know, what I can improve on. But, you know, I can't thank our sponsors, 811 and Diamond Equipment, for all that they've done for me and given me the opportunities that I've had, and hopefully we can go out and make them proud here at the end of the season and next year.
Now, for next year, you're going to be returning to Billy Bowe Motorsports, or are you still not sure about what team you'll be running with?
Yeah, still not sure yet. We're trying to work out all the sponsorship and the funding and where we're going to be. You know, I would like to return to Billy Bowe Motorsports, but you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. That's a great organization, and I really believe in what they're doing over there. So we'll just see where we end up.
All right, thank you so much, Mason. I'll toss it over to Brent now.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. I was going to ask you, you know, today NASCAR announced the Camping World Truck Series moving down to 32 trucks next year, and then also a qualifying format similar to what Sprint Cup Series running. I was just kind of wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, I think the move on the qualifying is going to be a really good deal from my understanding, and I only briefly read this earlier on Twitter, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but they're going back to single car riding, kind of the old style qualifying, with the exception of what they're doing for like the last 5 or 6 trucks getting in the race. And I'm definitely a big fan of that. I haven't really liked this group qualifying this year. It really doesn't give people a chance to show who has the best truck, and you know, very rarely in a race weekend do you get to do who has the best truck. That's not oftentimes the winner. So it gives teams and drivers a chance to show what they have in one lap. And honestly, I'm just a lot better at single truck qualifying than I am this group stuff. I'm excited to see us go back to that, and hopefully I can get a little better qualifying for next year.
And also I was wondering, you know, the ARCA Racing Series, they run a night race. And I was wondering, you know, how many drivers have come up to you for advice for that Kansas Speedway ARCA race a couple weeks ago, just picking your mind and kind of just, if there was any, could you just talk a little bit about what that was like to be able to help those drivers?
Yeah, you know, for the most part, I think we raced most of them last year at Kansas, but, you know, I'm always willing to help anybody that wants to come ask. And, you know, we had some success in the ARCA series last year, and, you know, I felt like I learned a lot. It definitely carries over. So anybody that's coming up and going to those new racetracks, you know, I'm more than willing to help. I know I asked a lot of questions when I was coming through the ARCA series and always picking people's brains about the new racetracks, and I still do in the truck series. So, it's one of those things where you repay the favor anytime you can. I'm always grateful for advice that people are willing to give me. So I'm more than willing to give others advice to try to repay that.
All right, and I'm going to toss it over to anyone else who has a question from Mason Megan.
I do. Hey, Mason.
Hey.
All righty. Well, my question is this. When you were growing up, who was like your idol growing up? Or, you know, who was that? Who was that one guy that, you know, kind of made you think, okay, I should get into racing?
As far as when I got started racing, not really anybody, to be honest. I just I had a go-kart when I was little and loved go-kart race, or driving my go-kart in the backyard. And I was, you know, 4 years old at the time and didn't know the difference in the go-kart that you raced or one in the backyard. But, you know, I just begged my dad to let me start racing go-karts. And so anyways, we got into quarter midget racing when I was 7, and But from there, we ran a lot of mini cup races and baby grand races, which are like mini cups, like a half scale stock car, and baby grand like 3/4 scale stock car, full body, same exact suspension. And Carl Edwards actually ran baby grands before he went into NASCAR and won the championship. And I had won quite a few races and a couple championships in mini cups and baby grands. So I thought that was pretty cool to see that where he started that, where he started his journey and where he's made it to today. So, you know, hopefully I can kind of follow along in the path that he took. But once I started racing, I also found out that my uncle had raced. He quit before I was born, but then we were fortunate enough, I guess, to get to race against each other when we came up baby grand racing. He actually got a car and I raced against him some. So that was kind of cool to see that come full circle. And you know, he still comes all the races with us every weekend.
Awesome. And my second and also last question is that, you know, you already have, you know, your career in ARCA and you're running in the truck series. Are you looking to head up into the Cup Series? And if you are, what team do you dream of racing when you of racing with when you get there?
Well, anybody that I can race for. you know, obviously the goal would be one of the top four or five teams. You know, you got Hendrick, Joe Gibbs, Stuart Haas, you know, all the big teams would be, you know, where you'd want to be. They, you know, they're contending for races, running up front every single week, winning championships. So ideally that'd be where I'd want to go. You know, as of right now, I don't have any plans to go run Cup. Obviously that's what I would love to do. And that's my dream. You know, the next step for me is probably going to be the Nationwide Series if I get that opportunity. But for now, we're going truck racing. Hopefully we can have some success here in the truck series so that we can move up and get to race on Sunday.
So I wish you good luck, Mason, and now over to the next panelist.
Thank you.
Mason, I have two more for you. You mentioned you were a wrestler, and now being a race car driver, are there any workout routines that you have to stay in shape, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I love working out and staying in shape. You know, I make sure I try to get at least 5 days a weekend. It's hard to get more than five, being that we're on the road so much. But I try to stay in as good shape as I can. You know, people ask all the time, if, you know, oh, what do you need to stay in shape for to turn left and put your foot on the gas? But you know, it takes a lot more than that. There's a lot of, you know, it takes a lot of stamina and et cetera. But it also helps. You know, unfortunately, the times do get wrecks. It helps recover from that so that, you know, you're not sore and that you're not beat up moving into the next week. Obviously, hopefully you don't have to do that, but it comes along with territory. But, no, I'm very avid about making sure I work out every day. And, you know, I try to eat fairly well on top of that.
And, Mason, you can't do it by yourself. Who would you like to thank to make this racing season possible?
Definitely got to give a huge thanks to 811 Before You Dig. It's a number you call. They would come out and locate underground utilities. So it doesn't matter if you're a contractor putting in a gas main or you're going to put a mailbox in your front yard, you need to call 811, locate all the underground utilities. And also Diamond Equipment, they're big help to us as well. And definitely got to give a big thanks to my family and for all their support that they've given me.
Well, Mason, thank you for coming on, and best of luck to you at Martinsville and the rest of the season.
All right, thank you, guys.
That was Mason Mingus, NASCAR Canton World Truck Series driver of the number 15 Billy Boat Motorsports Chevrolet Silverado. So, guys, we talked about Talladega, and we're going to go back to it just for a minute. I have one topic I want to bring up. NASCAR enforced this rule. Beginning of the season, there would be no tandem drafting. And what I saw on the last lap of the truck race was a lot of pushing. Now, I think Joseph and I talked about this, you can't push everybody. But, I mean, what did you guys think of that? I mean, should there be a rule just to maybe bring it back for the last lap? Or, I mean, what does NASCAR do in that situation?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting, an interesting deal, but, I mean, do I want it back? You know, it's kind of a judgment call when one of those comes up, but then also, you know, it also kind of puts a little, I don't know exactly what to call it, but kind of puts, you know, I lost my mind trying to discuss it. But anyway, you know, I think it's interesting how they do it. But to be honest, I think they should just let them do what they want and that.
Yeah, I want to go to Glenn next because I know he and I were kind of tweeting back and forth. I mean, Glenn, what do you think of the whole situation?
I mean, the penalty that was handed to Matt Crafton and Joe Nemechek, that was just pure BS. I mean, really what they need to do is they need to bring the race back into the driver's hands because the drivers can police themselves, and they know when it's time to give a little bump and it's time and when it's time to back off sometimes, which sometimes, as we've seen in the past, they often overheat themselves and kind of use themselves up. But yes, we need to bring bump drafting back for all the series and just, you know, tell NASCAR, look, hands off. Just, you know, determine if somebody went below the yellow line and advanced their position. You know, just do that and just leave the bump drafting to the professionals.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that part. I think that the Cup Series definitely, definitely should not have the tandem draft. They have found the perfect, they just found the perfect type of racing in the Cup Series now at restrictor plate tracks. I would argue that this is one of the best Talladega races over the past 5 years. The restrictor plate package has been great this year, and they need to keep up with that after what happened with the tandem draft. The tandem draft did not work at all in the Cup Series. But in Nationwide and Truck Series, it was perfect because it's something different than the Cup Series, and that's what you need, especially in Nationwide where the group drafting just doesn't work and they end up going single file for over half the race. And the Truck Series, because of the way the bodies are shaped, they wouldn't even tandem draft that long. They would just do it for about a lap or so, like you saw at the end of the Talladega race. So I agree with you on that part. I think that they shouldn't control it at all, at least in the Nationwide and Truck Series.
Yeah, I agree with all of you. I think going back to those rules, I agree with that. The Cup Series does not need to be tandem drafting. I mean, they had it for 1 year, and then it pretty much was dead after that. And, I mean, you pretty much, it actually started with the Car of Tomorrow, believe it or not, when Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart were pushing on the last lap of the race at Talladega in the fall of 2007. And that was, I think that was the first time we actually saw the tandem draft. I mean, it wasn't really enforced, but we saw it at that time. You know, the bumpers could hook up like that. And then, of course, until 2011, when they did it all year long. So I'm fine with it, the Truck Series and the Nationwide. It just left me baffled at the end of the truck race that everybody was doing it and then nobody was getting penalized. And I know, I think, Joseph, that you brought up to me that you can't penalize everybody, and I get that. But it's just, I think it was a flawed rule right there with that. And I know one of you brought up the yellow line rule. That's a fantastic point. I don't like the yellow line rule. I think on the last lap it needs to go away because what I've seen with that rule in the past is that, especially the tandem drafts, you see those big wrecks at the end of the race, and I hate seeing either trucks or cars all torn up because they can't pass. Because if they pass below that yellow line, that's a no-no, and then it's, you know, they get black flagged, and kind of like what Regan Smith did back in 2008, and then, of course, the big flip with Keselowski and Edwards in 2009 in the Cup Series. I mean, that kind of reflected the rule, and I know why they brought the rule, the yellow line rule, and that was because of Dale Earnhardt and his wreck, and you know, it's a tough rule to have. I mean, especially for the last lap, because you just can't have. I mean, it's tough to pass. You got to pass them on the outside. If you go below the yellow line, your day is pretty much over. Like when I view the Keselowski Edwards situation, I think Edwards just came down on Keselowski. Keselowski was not going to go below the yellow line. And that's why that happened. So, I mean, there's still a lot that NASCAR can look into this, and like I said, don't even touch the Cup Series. They're fine right now with what they have. We've seen four great restricted play races this year, and you've seen all different winners. We had four different winners in four different races this year in the Cup Series. And then, of course, we had, I think we all had different winners in the Nationwide and Trucks as well. So it's nice to see a change of pace of winners in those series. And we saw it this year.
And it's worked perfectly this year. The competition has been great. You've seen so much passing into restrictor plate races. It's been great to watch. It's building excitement for next year, which is huge. It's giving more people of what to expect for next year, especially for the Daytona 500. But if NASCAR would put less of an emphasis on qualifying and stop messing with qualifying like they did at Talladega this past weekend, they would be perfectly fine. There's no reason for this crazy type of qualifying when they could do single-car qualifying or even heat qualifying. That'll make it so much easier. You know what? Yeah, a car might get wrecked during the heats. Okay, that's understandable. But you know what? Maybe they can make a rule where they use their backup car instead of their primary car for the heats or something like that. They can work around with it. They have plenty of time before Daytona, but as long as they don't use this qualifying, they'll be fine.
Yeah, before I go to Brett or Glenn, I just want to add to that. I mean, I didn't see it, but I did follow it on Twitter, and I saw the last round. I mean, I couldn't stand that. And I think one of you told me, or somebody I know told me, that I think single-car qualifying is the only way to make it fair. Even though it takes 3 hours long, I think it makes the fastest car get the pole in the fairest way. And you saw that with the Daytona 500. The guy who was the fastest speed just in the all-out, flat-out speed, one single-car run, got the pole. So I think NASCAR still has a lot to look at because, of course, you had Ricky Stenhouse Jr. missing the race, and nobody expected that. And, of course, I think I heard something about Jeff Gordon or Tony Stewart barely making it. With that, it's just a tough situation because I know the drivers knew what could have been at stake. But I think NASCAR doesn't need to make changes before the Daytona 500 comes in 2015. Because I know they announced they're going to go to group qualifying. So honestly, I think this new qualifying for Talladega is very confusing. And that's why nobody got it last weekend. So, I mean, the race was great, but just qualifying I think stole this part of the story. Just, it was nuts. So, I mean, Brett or Glenn, I mean, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I mean, we kind of saw it earlier in the year also at Daytona and Nationwide Series where that rain came and a bunch of guys wrecked and caused James Buescher and a few other big names, I think, missed the field. So, you know, I mean, this group qualifying format, it just doesn't really fit the restrictor plate races because of the potential for a big wreck because they want to run in a pack.
Glenn, anything you want to add, Glenn?
I disagree 100% with not touching the Cup Series. The Cup Series definitely needs something back, and they basically need something because, you know, this pack racing stuff might be fun to some fans, but I've never been a fan of it ever since we tried out doing the pairs. And besides, the Nationwide Series had the perfect package. You know, the two-car Tango fans could have something, and the pack racing fans could have something. It was a balanced diet. NASCAR needs to do something with the Cup Series that can give the fans a little bit of something. In fact, a good way to kind of like bring it back, give the Cup guys a little bit bigger opening in the grill. And the minute that you open that grill up a little bit more, now there are so many different possibilities. Sure, they wouldn't be able to, you know, push or do too much, but they could push for maybe like 5 or 10 seconds and before having to back off or before having to pull out a line and cool down their engine a little bit. So
that's not the problem. What happened at Talladega was something that the teams planned out very carefully, because they only wanted basically one lap to put in their time. They had two laps to warm up and then one for their time. They weren't trying to cool off their engines. They had the brakes for that. NASCAR already fixed the heat problem for the engines. What they did do with Talladega was similar to that in terms of going slow around the track, but that was just to waste time, to be honest. And the fact that they did this format at a restrictor plate track, as you saw earlier in the year, just doesn't work because of the way restrictor plate tracks are. And qualifying doesn't really matter. As you saw, you had guys running in the back of the pack who ended up finishing a lot higher than guys that were running in the front of the pack. It's just that simple. They shouldn't be putting an emphasis on qualifying, especially at a restrictor plate track, when there's proof, solid proof, that qualifying is very minuscule at these tracks. I get it, they're trying to make things exciting, but you know what? When you're getting the drivers and teams mad every single time you're at one of these tracks because you're not doing single-car qualifying, it's a problem. And Kyle's right. What's wrong with single-car qualifying? It's cool to watch that. It shows who has the most raw speed throughout the year. And I think that's the best part about it. You saw Austin Dillon. He had the best speed at Daytona for the 500. You know what? He won the pole. That's how it should be. Qualifying should be single cars.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that. I think with the group qualifying, what hurts the most is the single car teams. I mean, whether they have the speed or not, the flat out speed, I think that hurts them the most, because I think it was at, as Brett brought up, I think it was Daytona in February when Chris Buescher missed the race, the Nationwide Series, and then with Joe Nemechek at Daytona in July, if you don't have teammates or you don't formulate a plan, you're not going to make the race because, the 60 had no points, and same thing with the 29. I think it was their first race of the year, so definitely a tough situation for that team, so... Yeah, I mean, it puts them in a box. And then it's nice to have the duels in February, because then you can have the single car runs and then have the duels on Thursday. And if you make the race, you make the race. You don't make it, you don't make it. I remember what they did. They had the top 36, like they still do, in qualifying, and they did the provisional. That's just how they did in the old days. I hope they do that. And honestly, I hope they bring it back, because it's nuts and it's crazy with this new system. I mean, it's kind of confusing. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens come February, and if NASCAR will rethink their decision to change, go back to single-car qualifying or do something to make the group qualifying format better, because it was nuts on Saturday. But, guys, after qualifying, I believe we had a race. And this was the last race in the second round of the chase. And who else? The guy who everyone thought might have been suspended for this for Talladega was Brad Keselowski coming on top. Pretty much what I've seen in baseball terms, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, two outs, Keselowski up to the plate, hits a grand slam. That's pretty much, I think that kind of just says his day at Talladega. Just crazy, and there's so much to go over, and we're going to recap it right now. Guys, first off, I think, Joseph, you said this first, this was probably one of the best restrictor plate races we've seen in a few years, and I absolutely agree with that, because we saw great racing throughout the race, and I thought for a point Jimmy Johnson was going to win the race. I know he led the most laps, but in the end, just had no friends, and you need to have friends at Talladega if you're going to win the race. And just no one around him, and kind of, did the Hendrick camp. And at the end of the day, you know what happened there. So three cars getting eliminated from the chase, and Jeff Gordon being the only one still in there. So, guys, what did you think of the race, and what was your reaction after the race for who was going on in the next round and who was being eliminated?
Yeah, it was a crazy race. I still can't comprehend the fact that Brad Keselowski came back and won that race after getting slammed into by Michael McDowell, What an incredible run by Keselowski. He deserved that win. Let me tell you, he had one of the best cars all day long. He fought through adversity, and I think it was partially because he had a wicked on his car, and he had some very wicked moves at the end of that race. You got to give credit to Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman was holding on to that lead for a long time in the last few laps, and he almost won that race if he would have had help. But Matt Kenseth didn't go with him. Clint Boyer didn't go with him. And he ended up dropping from first to fifth on the final lap, which is pretty crazy. And then you have a guy like Landon Castle finishing in the top 10. Before Sunday, he never even finished in the top 10. But what an incredible run for that Hillman Racing team. And he is by far the most underrated driver in the Sprint Cup Series, in my opinion. He's finishing top 25 every single week lately. And that's on non-restricted plate tracks. And this is a very, very small team with a handful of employees. So kudos to them. And then their teammate, Travis Poppoli, he finished sixth. So that was a great run for him. His first top 10 since 2012. But the one thing that I was surprised about was the fact that Kyle Busch, the fact that Kyle Busch missed round three is very stunning to me because he was running incredibly well throughout. He was finishing top five every single week, but guess what? A wreck cost him a chance at the championship. So now he got eliminated. I'm not surprised at all that Jimmy Johnson and Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Casey Kane all got eliminated. I did a column about this on Monday for frontstretch.com, and I basically said this column, why should anyone be surprised that these three Hendrick Motorsports drivers were eliminated when, one, they haven't been consistent at all this whole year, not just during the chase, but throughout the year. Casey King being the worst of them. He's lucky he even made the chase the way he's been running. He's been running about 15th to 20th every single week for the past month or two. So it's incredible they even made the chase. And then Dale Earnhardt Jr., earlier in the year, I would say he was a championship favorite. But over the last 2 months, he's cooled down a lot. And he has only had about two top tens, I believe, since his win at Pocono in August. So he's been struggling. And then Jimmy Johnson was starting to turn it on and was getting some top five finishes, but didn't really show that he was capable of winning races. He was just showing you that, oh, I have speed, but I'm not the quickest like I was earlier in the year. And that's a problem for a guy like Jimmy Johnson because he's used to running up front. And when you're running in 10th place every week, you start to handle things differently. And part of that is because of the new chase format where you have to have a new mentality. And now he's going to have statistically his worst year ever. His previous worst finish was 6 points, but now it doesn't even look like he's going to get that, and he'll be lucky if he could crack the top 10 the rate he's been running. He was in the top 5 at Talladega, and guess what? Finished 24th. So it's left to Jeff Gordon now for the Hendrick Motorsports banner. But then there's a couple other guys in there that are still in the chase, I think, that are really out there to prove something that to people. And two of those guys are Newman and Denny Hamlin, guys that most people didn't really have. And remember, Denny Hamlin missed a race early in the year. So if he wins the championship, not only would he be the first Toyota driver to win a championship, but he'd do so by running one less race than everyone else.
I thought the race was pretty good. And, you know, like Joseph said, you know, he had a pretty good point about why he's not surprised at Jimmy Johnson and him missing the second round of the chase. But I'm not going to lie, I was kind of surprised by that. I did not think that Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jimmy Johnson would miss the second round of the chase, and Brad Keselowski just barely making it in by winning a race. So, you know, it was an interesting race. And also on that point, you know, when we were watching the race, you know, some of those drivers, you know, like Landon Castle and then, you know, they took away some valuable spots from those chase drivers. So, you know, what a great race for them. And even though, you know, a Talladega race, anyone who starts, you know, can finish. I mean, they deserve those runs, and I thought they ran the race pretty well. As far as other things, you know, we didn't hear much about Michael Waltrip. You know, I thought that that team would be up there, but I was kind of shocked that they wasn't. You know, and as we discussed earlier, you know, I was kind of shocked by a whole qualifying format by Ricky Stenhouse and Allgaier, those two big name drivers missing the field. And, you know, it's kind of weird not seeing them out there racing, but very unfortunate situation for that. And as far as Terry Labonte, you know, coming in here, starting what most likely is his last race, unless he can't get other funding. You know, unfortunately, I'd go to the rear for changing the paint scheme and just couldn't really get up front any further than where he started from. But, you know, and it was bad to see him finish where he did in 33rd. But I don't know, though. I thought it was a pretty good race. And, you know, I can't wait until Daytona next year. It's going to be a fun race. And, you know, Martinsville this weekend is going to be fun, too.
Okay. Number one, we all watched the same race, but I don't think it was the best Richard DeFlate race ever at Talladega. That's kind of an overstatement. I mean, it was good, but I think that the best parts, and you guys are missing two major elephants in the room, or two major drivers that led. Danica Patrick, and how about Ryan Blaney? Ever Sprint Cup Series race, he leads the pack at Talladega. I mean, how many people in their first start can say that they've led a restrictor plate race in their very first career race? I mean, I was very impressed with Ryan Blaney. He didn't make a single mistake all day. There was this one point where I thought he could stay up there and maybe even win, you know, pull Jay McMurray on the field. But, of course, you know, he got shuffled back, and so did Danica Patrick. I mean, you should have – I mean, you know, we have Junior Nation, but Danica Central – my goodness, Danica, as soon as she took the race lead, Twitter blew up, the fans blew up, and I hate the fact that the Dale calls are so quiet because I was thinking that once Dale Jr. took over the race lead, we would hear them as almost as if they were like Vuvuzelas or something. As for the championship, good luck trying to sell this to new fans because, my goodness, not having Kyle Busch, Jimmy Johnson, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. in the chase, that is unheard of. I mean, like, if you – okay, let's rewind the tape back to the Daytona 500. If you had told me that these four drivers, Kane, Busch, Johnson, and Jr., were not going to make the last couple of chase races, I would have laughed in your face and would have said, you know, go Jr., go Jimmy. And now here we are today, and, you know, NASCAR's favorite son – the six-pack guy going for his seventh, the pretty boy in the farmer's car, and, you know, the new papa are not going to be in the chase, and it's only Jeff Gordon. I'll tell you one thing, those Hendrick drivers are going to have to get right behind Gordon and help him any way he can, because Gordon is really the last shot for Hendrick Motorsports to basically get a championship this year. And looking forward to Martinsville, It's definitely going to be a fun race, but look for some payback. Do you remember what happened back at Charlotte? I bet you that somewhere in the race we might see a little payback from those drivers' probation or not.
Yeah, Martinsville's always crazy as it is. And actually, that was Ryan Blaney. That was his second career start. Made his Sprint Cup debut at Kansas in May. And I know Brett was... Yeah, that's okay. I know Brett was there for that, so it's actually his second, and still has not raced with his dad, Dave Blaney, in a race yet. They tried at Kansas, but the 77 car at the time, Humphrey Racing, and Dave Blaney did not make the race, so that did not happen. So my thoughts on Talladega is just absolute craziness at the end of the day, with Brad Keselowski just putting the icing on the cake for that Penske organization, stolen it. And right now, I think right now the top four, at least I think, is the two of Keselowski, Kevin Harvick, Joey Logano, and Jeff Gordon. Those have been the four strongest cars we've seen in the chase, and they've all won a chase race so far this year, whether it be in the first or second round. So, and yeah, and with Hendrick Motorsports, I think that's a huge blow to that team, losing three cars in the one round and not having Jimmy Johnson. But with this new format, it shows you need to be good at a certain time. And with the 48, it's kind of their own fault, to be honest with you, because I mean, the wreck at Candace was unfortunate, but I think what really cost them was the pit call toward the end of the Charlotte race, running fourth, and then coming in the pit, get two tires, and then everybody getting bypassed by everyone with four tires, and then finishing outside the top 10. So just bad break, and then of course, you know, with Talladega leading the most laps, just no friends at the end. And yeah, Glenn, you do bring up a good point with Danica Patrick. I think before that caution came out, she had a good shot at winning that race. I really think that because that caution changed a lot, and Danica wound up falling back toward the end. So, and also with Kyle Busch, I would have not expected that. A third at Kansas, a fifth at Charlotte, and doesn't make the chase because of a wreck at Talladega. I think that was their best chance. I think if they moved on, it would have been pretty good, to be honest with you. And I think even though Joe Gibbs Racing has not shown the speed as they should at a track like Texas coming up in a few weeks, I think for this week, for Matt Kenseth, for Denny Hamlin, this is crucial that they win this week or at Phoenix, because they have been decent on short tracks this year. And only two wins on the season for Joe Gibbs Racing, Denny Hamlin at Talladega, and then Kyle Busch at Auto Club earlier in March with the whole thing with the tires. So really, they still have two shots to go. Matt Kenseth still looking for the first win, and pushing Brad Keselowski, of all people, to the win at Talladega. And I think he said, or someone mentioned, that he did it for him, not pushing Brad to the win. He did it for himself because he needs to get the best finish he can possible at a track like Talladega. So interesting to bring those points up, and just absolute chaotic at Talladega. There's so many storylines we got out that weekend. And I'm looking forward to next year, Daytona. I hope we see some of the same with the restricted plate racing, you know, with the new rule changes coming up. And like I said, I hope they change the qualifying format next year as well. So, and when I mean that, I mean the Daytona 500. I'm fine with how the knockout is fine with every other track. So I think there's a lot to look forward to next year. I hope, like I said, the rules package will help a lot. So just so many storylines going out of Talladega. And then, of course, one more thing with Ryan Newman, you know, finding the car to be too low in post-race, and then NASCAR announcing yesterday that the car was low because of damage and no penalties were assessed. So RCR still has that one driver still in the stable in there. And actually, they had two affiliated cars that made the chase this year with Ryan Newman and, of course, AJ Allmendinger in the 47 with JTG Doherty Racing. So, guys, Martinsville coming up. It's going to be a fantastic week, and we go into Martinsville, and so many. We're going to have the same storylines, like you said, going with Payback coming up, and we're going to preview the truck first, we can get to it yet. A few things I want to bring up before you guys chime in. Darrell Wallace Jr. is going to be running a number 34 truck this weekend. Yes, folks, you heard right, number 34, to honor Wendell Scott, who will be enshrined in the NASCAR Hall of Fame come January. Wendell Scott, the first African-American driver to win a Cup Series race. So that's going to be interesting. And Matt Crafton won in the spring with Dorsport Sport Racing, making it the last two spring races with them to win that. So just, and then Darrell Wallace Jr., going back to him, he's a defending winner of this race and got his first career win at Martinsville last year and getting a grandfather clock. So guys, going into the Saturday's race, who are the favorites right now, and why do you think that? I mean, you think Dorsport's the favorites, or you think it's somebody else?
You know, I think the driver who I think is going to be up front all weekend, or for the Truck Series, you know, Darrell Wallace Jr. definitely, and also the other truck with Kyle Busch Motorsports, the number 51. But also, I think we're going to see the Red Horse Racing drivers up front too, you know. I mean, coming off fresh a win at Talladega, it's definitely going to be interesting, and I think they're going to have lots of speed this weekend. So, you know, following them and all that's going to be interesting, but no, I think it's going to be a fantastic race, so we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, you bring up a good point with that, and I think it's going to be the same suspects this week as it was in the last two races at Martinsville. It was Matt Kraft and Darrell Wallace Jr. 1-2 in the spring, and then, of course, Darrell Wallace Jr. winning last fall. I think we're going to see the same exact thing come Saturday. And like you said, I think Eric Jones will be another driver. And I also want to just keep an eye on two guys, both running, have a zero in their truck number, is Cole Custer coming off of the Loudon win back in September. And then, of course, we have Matt Tift. I've seen in ARCA, Canon East for Ken Trader Racing, making his Truck Series debut this weekend. So those are two guys you want to keep an eye on as well, just to see how they'll do and how Cole Custer will deal with the momentum he has, and see how Matt Tift does as well. So it'll be interesting. And then, of course, that's the appetizer. We have the main course on Sunday. We have the Cup Series race at Martinsville. Believe it or not, guys, a Hendrick-affiliated car, whether it be Hendrick Motorsports itself or an affiliated car, has won every single race in Martinsville going back to October 2011. So, guys, who are your favorites this week? And do you think we'll see a surprise at the front, or are we going to see some drivers struggle?
We might see a little surprise at the front, but I think we're definitely going to see a lot of the mainstays up there, particularly Denny Hamlin. I mean, come on, it's Virginia, it's Martinsville, and anytime we go race in Virginia, Denny Hamlin is always at the front. But I'm not going to count out, spoilers, Jimmie Johnson and Dale Earnhardt Jr. In fact, Jimmy does pretty well here. A lot of people don't realize that. And Jimmie Johnson has won here many times as well. So we'll see, who the bell or who the grandfather clock chimes to. Probably the sleeper or the one that's probably not going to do so well here, believe it or not, is going to be Kyle Larson, because Larson finishes so far at Martinsville haven't really been the best, and he's kind of had a difficult time here, even though he's only done one race. But we'll see what happens on Sunday after like 500 laps. But I believe we're definitely going to see some chrome horn in towards the end of the race.
How about you, Brett? What do you think?
Well, I think this weekend's definitely going to be interesting for the Sprint Cup Series drivers. I think we're going to see Brad Keselowski running up front, definitely, Joey Logano. And then also now, I think this is going to be a time where the spoilers who was in the chase that are no longer in the chase, or drivers like Kyle Larson or whatnot, I think this is that time where they're going to start stealing some of these chase races. I mean, I'm shocked that we haven't seen that already, but, I think it's going to happen this weekend.
Yeah, I agree with that, Brett. I think this weekend out of all of them is going to be the most unpredictable, because you have guys like Kurt Busch, like Jimmie Johnson, who have won at Martinsville before, I was going to say Kyle Busch, but I don't think he's won there yet. But you have those three drivers, and Dale, and like I said, Dale Jr., of course, has always been up there. So it's going to be an interesting race, I think, with, when we get closer and closer to the rounds of the chase. Of course, there's going to be more drivers being eliminated. And I think for, like I said earlier, I think for, like, Matt Kenseth or Denny Hamlin, this is almost a must-win situation for them. Because I said with Texas, they just they had not had the speed with horsepower. But I think next year they're going to be absolutely scary with the addition of Carl Edwards as well and going to a four-car team. I think they're going to be great next year. I think they're going to finally catch up with Hendrick and Penske, because those guys had been really good. And Brad Keselowski, I mean, he hasn't been the best in Martinsville. I remember back to the race 2 years ago, the fall race, is that he had a top-10 finish, and he said that if he got a top-10 out of Martinsville, he's fine with that, and it wound up proving important because he wound up with the championship. So you don't always have to run fantastic in Martinsville. Same thing with Carl Edwards back in 2011. I know Tony Stewart won the race, but, I mean, Carl Edwards got a top-10 out of that, and that's what they wanted. That's what the team wanted, because Carl wasn't that very good at Martinsville. And there's just so many things that goes into Martinsville, so many strategies, and like you said, Glenn, a lot of chrome horns as well. I think you're going to see a lot of that this weekend, and you might see some payback. as well. And you've said, I've seen it in other races in Martinsville, nothing new. So I think when we go back to Martinsville and those hot dogs, I think it's going to be an interesting – it's going to be a great weekend with racing. Just hopefully no rain because, you know, you don't want to see rain this time of the year. It's just we've had the rain. Hopefully all the rain is gone and we've gotten it out of the way and we just have a nice weekend out in Martinsville and we're one step closer to knowing who's going to move on. Because I think, like you said, Brett, I think you could see a non-chase driver, even like a Jimmy Johnson or Kyle Busch come out on top at the end of Sunday afternoon. So we'll see. And since this is going to be, I'm already thinking about it. I'm almost speechless because there's going to be so many storylines that we've seen with every single chase race moving on. So definitely a lot to look forward to this weekend. So. With that said, I'm going to turn it over to Glenn for the open wheel report. I know there's some things going on right now, so take it away, Glenn.
Thank you very much. And, yeah, there's a this time a little bit short because, you know, there's going to be no F1 racing this weekend. They'll be racing again next weekend at Circuit of the Americas in Austin. That'll be really fun to check out. But the big news is actually coming out of the Cooper Tire Indy Lights series. I gotta break the habit of almost saying Firestone Indy Lights because it's called the Cooper Tire Indy Lights series. We got some good news for you, Sam Schmidt Motorsports followers. Schmidt Pearson Motorsports with Herb Agajanian is the latest team to commit to this series, placing a 2-car order as it prepares to campaign for its 9th Indy Lights title. 9th. Multiple car orders have been placed by the following teams: Bilardi Auto Racing, who won the championship last year; Juncos Racing, who moves up into Indy Lights after a little stint in Pro Mazda; 8 Star Motorsports, and McCormick Racing are the other teams that have purchased chassis. No word yet if Andretti Autosport will be racing that next year in the Indy Lights series, or if some of the other teams will be. I mean, we don't know about Fanforce United yet. Nor do we know about some of the other teams, so we'll have to wait and see when stuff comes out. Now, here's a sticky situation that's going on in F1. As you know, track contracts are starting to run out, or they're getting to that point where it's like, okay, you know, now we're going to be looking at some different tracks. Well, on the heels of knowing that there's possibly going to be a Las Vegas race for F1 in the streets of Vegas, plans are afoot for an F1 street race in the heart of Madrid, Spain. Now, there's a slight problem here. Spain currently holds a race. The Spanish GP is held at the track in Barcelona, Circuit de Catalunya. That contract only runs until 2016. So that means that in 2016, we could see a facility change. But Barcelona has been a staple on the calendar, just like with Monza and some of the other tracks. So if this happens, will Spain end up leaving Barcelona to go and run in Madrid? Or could we see in a rare instance of a country holding 2 races in the same country at different times of the year? I don't know. We used to do this, or could it be where they would alternate tracks, just like how Valencia and the Hockenheimring in Germany was working. So we'll have to see what happens with this. We already know that this race will probably end up taking place in 2017. In fact, 2017 is now looking like a bright year for more races and stuff like that. So for sure, we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. And, by the way, tickets are on sale for the Malaysian E-Prix. Just go to FormulaE.com, and you can purchase tickets there if you're going to go check out the Formula E-Prix. And speaking of them, if you go to their YouTube page, which is just simply Formula E, you can check out a race-edited version of one of their simulation races. I will say that the series actually looks fun, but it definitely sounds like a lot of RC cars are going around. And after a look at the Formula One series, and, oh, yes, one minor note here, the Caterham F1 team, we talked about them in the past. They are currently looking for a new place to set up HQ, but also there could be the possibility, once again, that they may not make the grid for 2015. So we'll wait and see what happens on on that. And I'm sure by next week we'll have a lot more to talk about. Also, we might have some more updates on rides and stuff like that. So anyway, that's it for Dopamine Wheel Report for this week. And I believe that I am the show as well. So anyway, you can follow Speedway Digest on Twitter at Speedway Digest. Also follow me at IndyCarGL2048. Follow Brett at NASCAR_Brett. Follow Kyle at Kyle Madra, I believe the last name is. And you can also follow Joseph, which is at NASCAR Joseph. So from all of us, all of you, you've been listening to Speedway Digest here on TalkShoe.com. And next week we'll have a review of Martinsville and a preview of Circuit of the Americas and, of course, Texas Motor Speedway. So see you there, partner.